The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily those of the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District or its employees. For more information about the sewer district and its projects and programs, visit neorsd.org. The Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District presents Clean Water Works, a podcast that explores water, sewer, and stormwater issues that affect you and your community. Learn about the people, projects, and programs that are protecting your health and the environment here in Cleveland and throughout Northeast Ohio.
Five, four, three, two, one. That's okay.
It becomes awkward if I'm not looking at anybody.
No, I know. It'll be awkward no matter what. Don't worry.
I'm trying my first time, so.
Good start.
Welcome to another episode of Clean Water Works. Donna, how's it going?
It's going well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We are here today. We have a very special guest today. We have not really gone into the laboratory aspects of the sewer district. Mm-hmm. A lot of people probably don't even know that the sewer district has a lab.
A really fancy lab.
Which goes by the name of Analytical Services mm-hmm. at the sewer district. And today we have supervising chemist Debmalia Bhattacharya.
Yes.
How long have you been with the district?
I started in 2015 as an intern.
And why does the sewer district have a laboratory?
Our primary wastewater plant treatment goes under the National Pollution Discharge Elimination Systems, what we in short call NPDES. Mm. So all our effluents that we release into the Cuyahoga River or into Lake Erie, the lab analyzes them, makes sure that whatever we are discharging into these water bodies are safe. And so all these analyses are taken care of in the lab. We make sure that our beaches are good for swimming in the summer when the beach season starts post Memorial Day mm-hmm. till Labor Day. So we analyze them. So that's what the laboratory does. It makes sure that the water that is discharged is safe.
The term you used is effluent.
Effluent is what goes out from the plants. What comes in, we call it as influent. Mm-hmm. We start from the influent. We also analyze the different processes, like samples from different processes from all the plants on a regular basis. But effluent is what goes out. And that is the NPDES has limits for some of the toxicants such as metals, mercury, phosphorus. So we analyze all those things in the lab.
So the water we're sending back out to the Cuyahoga and to the lake, we have to test it to make sure that it's
yes. yeah.
there's nothing harmful in there.
No. Yeah. Yeah, and every month, based on the lab results, the results are reported to the Ohio EPA.
What are some of the things that you test for?
Oh, it's a wide range. Just to give you a brief introduction to the lab. Mm-hmm. The lab is basically divided into five groups. First is the sample control, one of the primary group that receives samples, because we have to have a very strong chain of custody. Because other than our plant samples, we also analyze samples from other utilities. We help other utilities to do some of the analysis. We get from Solon, we get from Cuyahoga yeah. County, CCBH, Cuyahoga mm-hmm. County Board of Health. We get from Lake County. So we assist them in some of their analysis. So first thing in the sample control is that we receive the samples. We make sure they're collected properly. They will be preserved properly so that different analyses require different preservations. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the busiest groups. And, you know, they take care of everything in the front part.
And we're doing that for other communities, counties, because they don't have their own lab, or just because
some don't have I won't say they don't have their, some probably have labs but don't have some capabilities for some analysis. Mm-hmm. Some analysis require advanced instrumentation. Mm-hmm. So they do send it to us for analyzing those samples. Even industrials from those areas come mm-hmm. to us. So for sample receiving is the first part, where everything is received, we make sure everything has been collected properly and preserved. The second group is what we call environmental health, safety, and logistics. So this group kind of takes care of supplies. I mean, we use a lot of chemicals.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, they also are responsible for the lab safety because we use a lot of hazardous, toxic chemicals. They make sure they're disposed of properly. They make sure our inventory is always up to date so that we'd never run out of chemicals. Mm-hmm. And then we have the three primary analytical groups in that. First is the biology group. They analyze samples for bacteria.
For like E. coli?
E. coli, yes.
Okay.
E. coli, we do Legionella.
Oh, right.
Legionella is a bacteria that causes Legionnaires' disease. We test some from our plants, and if there is an outbreak in the area, we do get samples from them too.
Is that pretty common?
Not very common. It's not. I mean, now people are aware. I believe they are taking good care so that doesn't grow, but it does happen sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So that group does the bacteria, molecular biology, and one interesting test, what we call whole effluent toxicity test.
Whole effluent toxicity.
So I remember wet tests, right.
Yeah.
So what I talked about the effluent, right? I mean, we analyze for a lot of chemicals. But there can be so many more chemicals in there. We test our effluents in different concentrations on two organisms. One is a crustacean, a small, what we call like a water flea, Cerodaphnia dubia, small water flea. And another is a local fish, P. promilus.
Bluntnose minnow? Is that the
minnow,
name?
Fathead minnows.
Fathead minnow.
The P.
That's
promilus
right.
is basically the fathead minnows. Mm-hmm. And the C. dubia is a crustacean, a small crustacean. So we look for how they are growing, if they're surviving first, and how much they're reproducing for the fleas. And for fish, we look at survival and growth.
If one of our listeners was to walk into the laboratory, they would see these aquarium-type tanks full
Absolutely.
Of these minnows and these crustaceans that you're cultivating, taking care of so that they can be used.
Absolutely. And since you mentioned this, it's funny. When we have the open houses, the kids, when they come in, they love that area. They can see the fish. You know, with all the instruments and we explain, for kids, it's okay. When they see the fish and the crustaceans, they're super excited.
Oh, yeah. And the tanks are, I mean, you guys, everything has to be kept really, really clean because it's so important for the test.
Yeah, so that's what the biology area does. The other group is chemistry. The chemistry group is responsible probably for the most demanding test in terms of daily turnover because we report daily to the plant so that they can make process optimizations depending on the results. So
you're not only testing the quality of the water, you're also looking at the solids that are removed.
Absolutely. And how much is there that they can change their processes as required. So plus other than that, we daily report the plants for phosphorus levels, ammonia levels. So that chemistry department, the division takes care of all these nutrients, analytes, cyanides, et cetera. And then the final is what our group does is advanced instrumentation group. That's what I supervise the group. We analyze for metals, mercury. These are our primary analytes, chloride, sulfate, etc. Mm-hmm. in the wastewater. That's what our group does.
What did you do before you were a supervisor?
I came to the United States in 2010 as a graduate student. I did my PhD from Kent State University.
Okay.
My major was biochemistry. When I joined the analytical service, I joined actually in the biology group. So I started as an intern over there.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed as a biologist until 2019, and then I became a supervising chemist. And I used to do a lot of wet tests.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I have a very good fundamental basics on that test. I like that test. It's very interesting.
Just the process of that particular test?
It's a test that takes 7 days. So you have to work all 7 days. So weekends, and we do a lot of wet tests for all our effluents, and they're probably twice a year, many of them.
Oh, okay.
And on both organisms. So, the biologist has to maintain the test throughout the 7 days. To make sure the test is done. There's a lot that goes around in the background. We maintain the fleas throughout the year. So, It's
in. Is there a person who's in charge of the yes. fleas and the fish?
Yeah, yeah? That's a biologist who works in
it. Oh, okay. So are the biologists are mainly working with those particular organisms, the fish and the bugs and the wet test?
Yeah. And other than that, they also are involved in other analytical tests such as qPCRs, Legionella, and other things.
But so when the beach test comes in for the right. E. coli test, they would be running that too?
Yeah, let's talk about beach testing.
Yes, sure. So our beach season in the summer starts basically from the Memorial Day, but we start analyzing the beach samples probably 2 weeks before that, just to gear up stuff. And also just to let you know, beaches in the summer, we also have to analyze our effluents for bacteria from May to October. So that's right.
the recreation season.
In the summer season, we have to make sure that there is no bacteria in the effluent that goes out. So we treat our effluents with hypochlorite, basically bleach. But you still see some levels in there. So we analyze our effluents daily basis.
WQIS collects those samples.
WQIS collects
the interns typically, and they collect other data as well. So
yes.
they collect like wave height, water temperature, things like that, and all of that gets input into a model.
Right, beach model. There's a model that was built, which is a multi-parametric linear model. And what basically is done is we put all these factors that Donna mentioned, the wave height, the temperature, rainfall the previous day or overnight.
Oh, wind? I think wind speed.
Wind speed, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Wave height, how many gulls in the beach. that kind of information, these physical parameters are put in, okay?
Because these are all factors that would
increase your
affect
bacteria
how much
count.
Bacteria is
right.
likely there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Using those data, we kind of use that model to predict the bacteria count.
How long do the results take?
The results take 24 hours turnaround.
So that's why you have to have the model, is because you can take a sample, even if you take a sample at 6 a.m. in the morning on a Tuesday, you're still not going to get the results until Wednesday.
24 hours. Mm-hmm.
And people want to know if they can swim on Tuesday.
Yeah.
You
right.
can't wait till Wednesday because there's no time machine still. So
still?
You
not yet.
And so you use this model to say, okay, looking at all of these factors and the day before and rainfall, like, do we think that it's safe to swim at the beach?
This is our best guess as to whether or not it's safe to go in the water.
Right. Rainfall is like a very good indicator.
Very good indicator, yeah, for sure. So
why is that? Why, when it rains?
What it does, if it rains heavy, it will wash a lot of stuff into the water, first of all. Plus, if it's very heavy rain, the storm waters go directly into the lake, so.
Can you talk about some of the equipment in the laboratory? You have some very fancy equipment, very expensive.
When I started here as an intern, that was one of the things I was very fascinated about. You know, I worked in a university where there was a central facility, but to get so many useful instruments in one place was very fascinating to me. Some of the instrumentations that we use for metals, we use two different kinds. There's a ICP, inductively coupled plasma. Basically, the metal is exposed to the heat of this, almost compared to the sun's surface. Plasma
really?
Has a temperature of the sun's surface. That's a temperature. So basically, you're putting it into ion mode. The metal is completely into ion mode, and that's how it's tested. So there are two ICPs we have. We have a regular ICP, which is absorption, and then we have a mass spec. A mass spec gives very sensitive results. You can really go down in your detection limits. You can detect, our detection limits are around 350 to 200 parts per trillion.
Oh, wow. Some parts per trillion.
Yes.
Wow.
We have a mercury analyzer, which actually our detection limits are like 0.5 parts per trillion.
Wow.
Yeah, so because the mercury limit is very low. Mm-hmm. Other than that, in the instrumentation, we have GCMS. GCMS is used for analyzing volatiles and semi-volatile organic compounds. These are pollutants discharged by chemical industries, pharmaceuticals, sometimes petroleum industries, or petrochemical industries, basically. So they can be released into the environment. So we can test them by this instrument.
And can you explain a little bit how a mass spectrometer works?
Yeah, absolutely. To put it into very simple terms, the analyte comes in, it gets ionized. Once it gets ionized, it goes through a detector. And then when it hits a detector, we detect them by the mass per charge. So it's very specific and very sensitive. So you know, there's very low chances of detecting something else on that one because you're going by M by Z ratio, mass per charge. So your sensitivities are very low. It's high. You can detect very low amount of compounds in there because it's so specific. So that's how the mass spec kind of works.
Okay.
It ionizes and then we detect how much is the mass divided by the Z, the charge, and the analyte.
And then it's like, it's this compound based on that.
Right. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And they all have, on every analyte and compound have their very unique mass per charge ratio.
When you're running these tests, you're finding some things that probably pass right through the treatment process.
Yes.
The pharmaceuticals is one thing.
Yep,
you know, the body doesn't use it all up. It passes through the body into the waste stream.
Yeah.
And it often can go right through the treatment process as well.
Yes, absolutely. A new upcoming toxicant, I won't say it's a new upcoming. It has been there. It has been under discussion. It's something called PFAS. It's a compound discovered somewhere in 1940s. And since then has been present in the environment almost every product. That's one of the problems. PFAS is perfluoro or polyfluoroalkyl substances. So basically a long chain carbon fluorine compound. And carbon fluorine compounds, the bond is one of the strongest bonds in nature. So it's very difficult to break down. So that's why they are kind of called forever chemicals, because they're very difficult to break down in the environment and stay there forever.
I think like mascaras.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Even some
takeout
of the
containers.
Microwavable, right? Spot on microwavable popcorns.
Oh.
Yeah. Cosmetics. It's everywhere. And it's the last time I checked, it's not one compound that's a problem. It's a group of 9,000 compounds.
9,000?
Yes.
Wow, that's a lot.
The toxicity for all of them is not individually known, but generally, you know, these carbon fluoro, they have a lot of health effects.
I think there was something like saying that they collected rainwater samples and it was in every single sample that they collected.
Everything. I'm not sure.
It's probably in all of us.
Yes,
it's definitely
absolutely.
In all of us, right?
It's definitely in you, for sure.
Yeah, even if not born, we have been exposed to it. Our clothes, everything pretty much has it. The Teflon, which has been the, cooking vessels forever. Now there are many cooking vessels, they say PFOA free and everything. But they use some coating. They just don't, they're probably not PFOA, but there can be some PF, like polyfluoro compound. So yes, it's PFOA free. It doesn't necessarily make it perfluoroalkyl substance free. So that's something we are trying to build capability in our lab to analyze.
Okay.
Because I think some states already have brought in limits for that in drinking water for sure. This is a big drive now to bring in, monitor, and find out what's in our wastewater levels. I mean, US EPA has given limits on some of them as a health hazard limit kind of stuff.
Do you think that they'll put limits on the manufacturers first?
They have to, because otherwise there's no way. We do not have, at least my knowledge in wastewater treatment is not that good. I'm more in the lab side. But I don't think we have PFAS-specific process to take it out. So in a wastewater, you can have lots of chemicals. And at most, we probably in the lab analyze for 30, 40 analytes, maybe 50. So that's a very limited number of analytes that we are analyzing in our lab in wastewater. So there's so much unknown in that water that we don't know. These are only parameters that have been set by Ohio EPA, and we are just analyzing.
These are the ones we have to look for.
Yeah. Right.
Right, for our permits, yeah.
There's so much that has not been analyzed, and we don't know. So when you do a whole effluent toxicity test, there are many times when we have seen everything was fine, but sometimes survival was an issue.
So the fish aren't, the fish and the bugs aren't surviving for some reason?
Not doing good or something. That's when we, you know, go back, look into other parameters.
It kind of like tests like the unknown unknowns.
Yes.
Right?
So basically when you know, you finish the wet test and you see that, okay, everything is surviving, you're confident that your water is clean.
When you were studying biology at Kent, were you particularly interested in water?
So my background is very hardcore DNA and RNA biochemistry. I looked into structural biology of RNA. When I applied for this position as an intern, one of the requirements was to do qPCR, because that's one of the very common analyses you do as an RNA biochemist.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what is qPCR?
qPCR is, it's quantitative PCR. Basically, you have a very limited amount of nucleic acid, which is RNA or DNA, and you're doing a polymerase chain reaction to enhance that, and you wanted to see how much finally ends up. You make curves and everything. So at that time, there was a method to use qPCR to find out how much bacteria can be in water, the beach water. And actually, when I was working as an intern, that was also the year after 2014 when cyanotoxins became very common. The microcystin from the harmful algal bloom in Lake Erie.
Yes.
That was a hot topic then. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of samples coming. There was a lot of research going on in the lab, how to analyze, what are the best methods. I loved that work. So, no, I had no water chemistry background at all. I've been a biochemist pretty much academically. My work experience previously for 2.5 years was in a food industry. Oh. But when I started working as an intern, I was like, yeah, this is cool. And plus, you know, I mean, I was in the academia versus in this lab is like, you see the effect of your work very soon. Mm-hmm. Academia, well, sometimes you can see it soon, but it takes a long time.
Right.
This is very practical. Mm-hmm. So, and some of the researches I did in the very initial stages was like instant. Mm-hmm. That we were developing that I won't say developing, but validating the method for cyanotoxin microcystin analysis. And mm-hmm. if somebody opens up the USEPA method, our district name, we have NeoRSD as one of the
That's really
helping
cool.
them in it. Yep, yep.
What a great contribution. Look at you go. Yeah. So there's methods out there right now for PFAS, and you guys are like working through those methods?
Yeah, trying to
see...
develop some methods, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the lab kind of collaborates a lot with other environmental agencies, academic institutions, and we try to do our bit for the environment.
Talking about those pieces of equipment, those very expensive machines mm-hmm. and equipment that you have in the lab, do they ever break?
Oh, yes, all the time. Very good question. But before I get to that, I actually missed up another interesting piece of equipment to have. We procured a next-gen sequencer.
A next-gen sequencer.
Right. What is it used for? It can sequence DNA from any...
What?
Bacteria.
You're like running your own little human genome project over here.
Kind of. It can do
you
that.
Can
kind
clone,
of.
You, are you, you cloning can... bacteria? What are you doing?
No,
there?
The reason is one of the big projects that we are doing in the lab, we're trying to do, is something called microbial source tracking. So we know the bacteria is coming, but what is the source of bacteria? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when we do mm-hmm. the bacterial test, we know there is E. coli.
Right.
But where is the E. coli coming from? Is it human? Is it animals? Is it birds? So that's what is called microbial source tracking. We're trying to find out the source. And from those samples, you can actually determine what using some markers, different markers. There are, like, we don't have a good marker for a raccoon. And, you know, there are a lot of raccoons in the sewer systems and stuff. But there's no way I can tell at this point. We don't have a good marker to determine if the... fecal contamination is from raccoons. So that's what, to get that, mm-hmm. we need the next-gen sequencer. So we can we can find out the markers after sequencing, the specific DNA sequence that can tell me it's a raccoon.
So before we were able to identify the bacteria, but now we can start to figure out where it's coming from.
Where it's coming from. That's, yeah. So that's one of the things the lab is going to move forward in, like, pretty.
Because you kind of have to find, like, a piece of their genome that mm-hmm. is specific to that
exactly.
species.
That's why we need the sequencing. We need to sequence the DNA mm-hmm. to find out that's where is it. Does not overlap with others. So it's very exciting to have it.
That's really cool.
And coming back, Michael, to your question on instruments. Yes, instruments do break down a lot. And it's, sometimes it's frustrating. But the very good thing is, especially with these high-end instruments, we do have service contracts with them. We have to call their tech service. We learn a lot from them so that next time it happens, we can do a little bit mm-hmm. by ourselves, whatever is accessible. But inside, if it goes into electronics, we're not qualified, and we shouldn't be doing it because it voids warranty.
Right.
So,
what's the most challenging part of your job?
We have problems with instruments or analysis on a fairly regular basis. Mm-hmm. You know, in my group, there are at least 4 or 5 analysis going on every day. Mm-hmm. But there are days when you can have multiple instruments not cooperating. Mm-hmm. One thing I have struggled with in my current position, that probably is a little bit of time management. We peer review our data. So our analysts run every analysis. Mm-hmm. They make a data pack. They make sure everything is good. And then we peer review it as a supervisor. Mm. So it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
So each analyst is running the analysis, making the data for the day and giving it to the supervisor. I'm getting 5 data or 6 data from 6 different analysts. Wow. So we have to peer review them, and there's a quite quick turnaround. I have to review them. Mm-hmm. So sometimes working on the bench, helping analysts, doing other. So it's just juggling mm-hmm. a little bit too many things.
Yeah.
I've gotten better with time. I've learned my priorities and stuff. So every laboratory environment has their own required skill set or practices and everything. I can tell you from my experience working in an academic lab versus the district lab or any environmental lab per se. We are a NELAC accredited lab, which is National Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Program. It's an accreditation program. It's one of the best accreditation that you can get in the environmental side of things from TNI. So we have very high standards for quality control and quality assurance and quality control. Compared to an academic lab where you're more focused on just the results, there's a lot less QAQC there. Mm-hmm. So somebody coming into NELAB, accredited lab or environmental lab has to make sure that the data means a lot. It affects directly lives of people, mm-hmm. can affect. So that's why we have that rigorous QAQC. It's probably very more, rigorous in a clinical lab or somewhere other labs. But compared to an academic lab, this is a big difference. Mm-hmm. Another thing people have to, in environment lab, just have to be aware. Samples are dirty. can be icky. I mean, we always wear, gloves, handling samples and everything. But some of our samples can be gross smelling.
Oh, septic samples.
Septic samples can be smelly. We have all our precautions to take. But samples can be sometimes dirty, smelly, stinky. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, as long as you can do that. When I came into academia, one of my driving force was to lead a team to do research. And as a supervisor of that advanced instrumentation team, of course, we are running samples on a daily basis, but we are doing work on method validation, starting up methods in the lab that has not been run before. So there's a lot of challenges, which I like. So that's the most best part of the job.
Yeah, it sounds like you are making a difference like every day, and especially when it comes to those method development and method mm-hmm. validation. Yeah. It's going to directly impact how we move forward.
It does. We are fortunate to have a great bunch of folks in the lab. The analysts, the chemists, exceptionally talented, the new people who have come in, dynamic, young, and then we have our experienced analysts who readily transfer their knowledge to the new people. It's a very collaborative work down in the lab.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us today.
Thank you for having me. It was a great opportunity to share our, you know, what we do in the lab.
Did you know eligible customers can save up to 40% on their sewer charges? Learn more about the Sewer District's cost-saving programs and use our discount calculator at neorsd.org/save or call 216-881-8247. That's neorsd.org/save or 216-881-8247.
Clean Water Works is produced by the Communications and Community Relations Department at the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District. Our music was composed and performed by G.S. Schrey. If you have a question or suggestion, or if you'd like to learn more about the Regional Sewer District, visit neorsd.org or call 216-881-8247.